Okay, good morning. Today's daf is Sota Daf Lamed Dalid. Today we're going to continue our discussion of the Nes or the Nisim that occurred as the Bnei Yisrael crossed the Yarden as they entered Eretz Yisrael led by Yehoshua. So we're going to talk about the formation that Klal Yisrael traveled in as they crossed the Yarden, how high exactly the waters of the Yarden backed up when they stopped flowing in order to enable the Bnei Yisrael to pass the Yarden, and then the Gemara is going to then segue into a discussion based on an explanation of how heavy these stones that the Bnei Yisrael took from the Yarden in order to write the Torah in 70 languages on the other side of the Yarden in Eretz Yisrael, based on how heavy those stones were, the Gemara is going to extrapolate how heavy the fruits of Eretz Yisrael must have been that the Meraglim carried with them, and that's going to lead to a long discussion of the sin of the Meraglim, how the Meraglim started off intending to speak ill of Eretz Yisrael, how this was apparent in the names of some of the Meraglim, and specifically then how Kalev and Yehoshua were saved from sinning along with the Atzas Meraglim. So we left off on Lama Gimel Lama Beis, three lines up from the bottom of the page. We had just discussed that when Klal Yisrael crossed the Yarden, it was unique in that the Kohanim carried the Aron as they crossed the Yarden, whereas usually it was the Levim who carried the Aron. We're told in the Chumash that it was the job of the Levim to carry the Aron to carry the Aron. Except we were told that when Klal Yisrael crossed the Yarden, it was the Kohanim, not the Levim, who carried it. The Gemara now is going to tell us that this was not the only time when the Kohanim carried the Aron. There were actually three times in history when the Kohanim carried the Aron as opposed to the Levim. So Tanya says the Gemara, three lines up from the bottom, Lama Gimel and Bebez, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Bishlosha Mekomos Nasa Kohanim Esa Aron. There were three times in history when the Kohanim carried the Aron. Number one, Kishavru Esa Yarden, when the Bnei Yisrael crossed the Yarden. That's what we just read about yesterday in the Gemara. Number two, Chesibu Es Yericho, when they surrounded Yericho in order to conquer Yericho. It was also the Kohanim carrying the Aron and not the Levim. And number three, when they returned the Aron to its proper place. What does this mean? So Rashi explains, this means that in the days of Shlomo, when they built the Beis HaMikdash, and they were bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, then it was the Kohanim who carried the Aron and not the Levim. So if you look in the Gilyan Hashas asks, he says, "Matzinu od shenasu haKohanim kashayu David berech mnei Avshalom." We see additionally that the Kohanim carried the Aron when David escaped from Avshalom. Tichsiv b'Shmuel Beis in Perek Tesvav, Yoshev Tzadok v'Avyasar es Aron Elokim Yerushalayim. That Tzadok and Avyasar, who are Kohanim, brought the Aron Elokim back to Yerushalayim. So this would appear to be a fourth instance in which the Kohanim carried the Aron, and not only three in history. This says the Gilyan Hashas, V'zorach Lamar, Kivan D'Nichlal B'Chlal Achzoros Mekomo Mikrei Chad. That this whole story about David escaping from Avshalom, this is all connected to Shlomo ultimately building the Beis HaMikdash and then returning the Aron to Yerushalayim. So this isn't a fourth episode in history where the Kohanim carried the Aron. This is part of the third episode in history. It's connected to the Echziru L'Mekomo, where the Kohanim carried the Aron. That was the third time when the Kohanim carried the Aron. So says the Gemara now, flipping to Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph, and getting back to the nace of the crossing of the Yarden, v'kivan shenitpulu ragli kohanim b'mayim. As soon as the kohanim stuck their feet into the water, chazru amayim l'achareim. So the water started flowing. Instead of flowing downward, downriver, the water would actually start to flow vertically. So the water would start to flow up in a column before where Klal Yisrael stood as they were crossing the Yarden. The Mefarshim explain that by Kriyas Yamsuf, we know it didn't work that way. By Kriyas Yamsuf, the Yamsuf didn't split until Nachshon and Aminadav, until they actually jumped in to the Yamsuf up until their necks. However, over here it appears that the Kohanim stuck their toe into the Yarden. All of a sudden the water started flowing up. So what happened? So they explained that by Kriyas Yamsuf, Klal Yisrael didn't have the schus yet of Kabbalah Satorah, and therefore the Yamsuf split in the schus of Mesiras Nefesh. So the Mesiras Nefesh was only exhibited once they jumped into the Yamsuf up to their necks. However, when Klal Yisrael crossed the Yarden, when they crossed the Yarden into Eretz Yisrael, they already had the Torah. This is already well after Matan Torah. It's 40 years after Matan Torah, so they already had the Torah, and therefore the Yarden split b'schus the Torah. It didn't require this act of Mesiras Nefesh like Klal Yisrael required by Kriyas Yamsuf. So here by the Yarden, as soon as the Kohanim stuck their feet into the Yarden, the water stopped flowing downstream and started flowing vertically. Shenemar uchavon nosei aron ad Yarden, when the people who carried the Aron came to the Yarden, and then immediately vayamdu amayim ayordem milamala. That basically the water stopped flowing downward and started flowing upward. It started flowing vertically. V'kama govan shalmayim, and how high was the water? So if the water was backed up and wasn't able to flow downstream, but instead was creating a vertical column of water, how high did the water get? So it says shnei masar mil al shnei masar mil. It's 12 mil by 12 mil keneged machane Yisrael, just like Machane Yisrael. So Rashi is gores, not that the water was 12 mil by 12 mil. It just so happens that Klal Yisrael, when they encamped and when they moved in their formation, the entire Machane Yisrael was an area of 12 mil by 12 mil. But this just goes to show that when they were crossing the Yarden, if they were crossing in the formation of encampment, it was 12 mil from beginning of the Machane to the end of the Machane. And so we're going to assume that then if Klal Yisrael was crossing the Yarden, and the length of Machane Yisrael was 12 mil, and we're assuming, according to this Shita, that the speed of the water flowing was equivalent to the speed of the Bnei Yisrael as they crossed the Yarden, so if the camp was 12 mil long, so too the water had to flow vertically in the Yarden 12 mil, for the time that it took the 12 mil long camp to cross the Yarden. So that's where Rashi is goreis. Not twelve mil by 12 mil, but 12 mil, 12 mil long. The Mefarshim then explained that Rashi has to solve for the fact that it took a little bit longer than the time for 12 mil because first the Kohanim had to go. They had to stick their feet into the Yarden. Then the water stopped. Then Klal Yisrael started going. Then Klal Yisrael had to finish coming out of the Yarden. Then the Kohanim had to come out of the Yarden. So it should have been a little more than 12 mil. But basically, the height of the Yarden was equivalent to the length of Machane Yisrael. The Gemara then now is going to say that obviously water flows much faster than people could cross the Yarden. So it had to flow. So the water had to rise to a level of much higher than 12 mil if it was rising vertically when Klal Yisrael was crossing the Yarden. So that's Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So that's Rabbi Yehuda Shita. So I'm a little Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon. So it says Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon to Rav Yehuda l'varecha. So according to your view, Adam Kal or Mayim Kalim? Who's faster? A man walking or water flowing? Havi Omer Mayim Kalim. It's obvious that the river flowing is much quicker than the speed in which a man walks. So Im Kain Ba Mayim V'Shot Menosan. And therefore, if water flows much faster than a man can walk, and if the water flowed upward only a length of 12 mil, and the formation of the camp of Klal Yisrael was 12 mil long, then there's no way that all of the Bnei Yisrael would have been able to successfully cross the Yarden, because the water would reach a height of 12 mil much more quickly than 12 mil length formation of people could cross the Yarden, and it would drown them. That rather the water kept on rising and rising and rising, piling up and rising ever higher, wave after wave. Yeser mishalosh meos mil, more than 300 mil, because obviously, again, the water flows much faster than people can walk. So if you needed the Yarden to stop in order to permit a camp of 12 mil long to cross, the water had to flow vertically up a height of over 300 mil. Ajarovos and kol malchei Mizrach umarav, until all the kings of the Mizrach and Marav saw the Yarden, so the water of the Yarden that had flowed vertically. Shenemar vayihi chishmo kol malchei Amori asher beiver Yarden yama b'kol malchei Akanani asher alayam asher asher hovish, es asher hovish, es Hashem, es mea yardain, mipnei b'nei Yisrael, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused the waters of the Yardain to dry up on account of the b'nei Yisrael in order to permit them passage, ad avram, vayamas levavam, their hearts melted, v'loyabem od ruach b'mnei b'nei Yisrael, and they lost any will to fight b'nei Yisrael, because they saw that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was performing these miracles for Klal Yisrael, there was no way that they would be victorious over them. V'yach Rachav Azona Amra L'Shulchei Yoshua, and even Rachav Azona, right, not your model citizen, was in the spoil by this, and told the Shluchim of Yoshua, Ki Shamanu es Asher Hovish Hashem es Mea Yamsuf, that we heard that HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused the Yardain to dry up, V'kiksiv V'nishma V'yamas L'vavenu V'lo Kama Od, and at that point, the Malachim Mizrach Amarav heard about this, and their hearts melted, their willpower evaporated, they didn't have the strength or the will to go after Klal Yisrael. So we see, in order for it to have been such a nace, that the Malachi Mizrach Amarav, from wherever they were looking, saw the waters of the Yardain that were right near the border of Eretz Yisrael, it's obvious that they rose more than 12 mil. They rose to a height of 300 mil, and this was necessary because the speed that the water flowed downstream was much faster than the speed at which Klal Yisrael walked. In order to permit the 12 mil long camp to cross the Yardain dry, the water had to flow upwards vertically over 300 mil. So says the Gemara Vayter, Odom Bayardain. So while they were still in the Yardain, so Amar Lem Yoshua, so Yoshua said to them like this, Du al ma'atem obram es Yardain. Understand why you're crossing the Yardain. Al menasha torish es yoshvei ha'aretz mifneichem. It's on the condition that you expel the current inhabitants of the land from Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar ve'orashtem es kol yoshvei ha'aretz mifneichem. That you have to divest Eretz Yisrael from the possession of these nations. Imatem osem kein mutav. If you do this, then great. And if not, then the water is going to come and it's going to drown osichem. So what's osichem? So says the Gemara, my osichem, osiv eschem. It's going to drown me and you. In other words, Yeshua told them that you are crossing the Yardain, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is performing these great miracles only on condition that you agree that you're going to expel the other nations from Eretz Yisrael. Tosfos also says that that wasn't the only condition Yeshua made. Yeshua also told Klal Yisrael, understand that you're crossing the Yardain only on the condition that you're going to be mekabel upon yourself also of the nestaros, not only the niglos you were accepted on yourself at Matan Torah, but now you have to accept on yourself also the nestaros. The Mefarshim are bothered. Why Dafka now, when Klal Yisrael was in the middle of the Yardain, it seems weird, right? The HaKadosh Baruch Hu was performing this great nace. The water, according to the Girsa that we have now in the Gemara, was rising up to 300 mil in the sky. And Yeshua thought now's a good time to give Klal Yisrael the shmooze, to tell them, hey, understand why you're going into Eretz Yisrael. It's on condition that you do this, that, and, you know, the third thing. So the Ian Yaakov explains that if you're going to give a matana to somebody and you're going to attach a condition to the matana, then you have to stipulate the condition before you actually give the matana. We know Eretz Yisrael is one of the matanos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Klal Yisrael. And so if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to place a condition on the Nesinas matana to Klal Yisrael, the stipulation had to be made before Klal Yisrael actually got to Eretz Yisrael, because if they waited until after Klal Yisrael got to Eretz Yisrael, it would have been too late. That's why when they were in the Yardain, this Mandi Amar holds that the Yardain is not part of Eretz Yisrael. When they're in the Yardain, before they got the Matana, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to convey the stipulation through Yoshua. That's why in the middle of the Yardain, that Yoshua had to make the stipulation, so that the stipulation should be effective before Klal Yisrael got the Matana. The Ein Yaakov explains in the alternative, that the symbolism here was just like by Matan Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Kof Aleihem Har Kegigis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu held the mountain over Klal Yisrael like a cauldron, and basically it seemed as though Klal Yisrael was almost forced to accept the Torah, but the symbolism is that they were doomed without Torah. They really had no choice but to accept it, because a Jew without Torah is nothing. So too over here, when they were Makabel Minasteros, according to Tosfos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also was trying to create an environment that symbolized to Klal Yisrael, you have no choice but to accept it, because without the Torah, you're nothing. And that's why when they were in the middle of the Yardain with the water flowing vertically, which is analogous to Kof Aleihem Har Kegigis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed them, look, without this, you're nothing, so you better accept these Nistaros. That's two explanations of the Ian Yaakov, why Dafka over here, Yoshua gave these stipulations to Klal Yisrael. So says the Gemara Vayter, now a little bit more than halfway down, so Odom B'Yardain, so again, they were still in the Yardain, Amar Lam Yoshua, And Yeshua said to them, "Arim lochem ish even achas al shechmo." Each person should take a stone on his shoulder. Lemispar shiftei Yisrael, in the number of the shvatim of Yisrael. In other words, take 12 stones. Uchsiv lamantia zos os bekir bechem, so that this should be an os among you. Ki yishalom bneichem machar lemar, that when your children ask you tomorrow, saying ma avana ma'ela lochem, what is the symbolism behind these stones? Simon labanim sha'avru avas asayardein. It's a simon to the children that their parents crossed the Yarden, and that these stones come from the riverbed of the Yarden, but we took them up with us when we crossed the Yarden in dry land. So Odom Yarden, they were still in the Yarden. Amar lam Yeshua, and Yeshua said to them, "Sulachem mizeh mitoch haYarden mimatzav ragle kohanim hachein shtei mesrei avanim." Again, with the stones, take these twelve stones from the place where the feet of the kohanim are resting, because that's where the water stopped flowing. Vavartem osam imachem, and you should carry them across with you. Vinachtem osam b'malon asher tolino bo halayla, and you should place them in the place where we sleep tonight. And we already saw in the Gemara, we'll see again tomorrow, that where they slept the first night, that was Gilgal. So in other words, you should take these stones with you out of the Yarden, so that you could erect for yourself a matseva in Gilgal. So Yachol b'chol malon o'malon. I might think maybe they had to schlep these stones with them wherever they encamped. So in other words, wherever they went in Eretz Yisrael, now they had to take these stones with them. Tamalomar shotolino bo alayla. No, not every place where they went, only where they were going that night. So Amar Rav Yehuda, so says Rav Yehuda, b'chalafta Rav Elezer b'masi v'chananya ben chachinoi, amdu alosan avanim, they estimated those stones, they saw those stones, and these rabbis estimated the stones, v'shiarum kol achatz v'achash shkula karboam sa. Each one weighed arboim sa. There's a machlokas whether each stone measured 40 sa or their weight was equivalent to the weight of 40 sa of water. Regardless, 40 sa is several hundred pounds according to the conversion. So they were really, really heavy. Yet the Bnei Yisrael, or certain members of the Bnei Yisrael, were able to take these stones and lift them up onto their shoulders as they were crossing the Yarden. Ugamiri, and we know, the Teuna de Midli Inchi Lakasve Tilsa de Teune Have, that the weight of something that a person could lift from the ground and place on his shoulders is one third of the total weight that the person can bear if somebody assists him in basically leveraging the object and giving it to him to hold. So in other words, if they were able to take something of 40 sa and hoist it from the ground and put it on their shoulders, that means that if somebody was assisting the person in carrying something, they would have been able to lift something the weight of 120 sa. 40 times 3 is 120. Why is this relevant? So we'll see right now. So mikana ata mechashev le'eshkol. From here we can calculate the weight of the eshkol shalanovim that the meraglim brought back with them from Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar, because it says by the meraglim, vayisuhu bamot b'shnayim, that they carried the eshkol shalanovim on a pole with two. So it says the Gemara, mimasho shenemar bamot eni yodea shebishnayim. From the fact that it says that they carried it with a pole, how else would you carry something with a pole? You need one person holding each end of the pole. So it's obvious that if they were carrying the grapes on a pole, on a stick, then there were two people holding the pole. So says the Gemara, b'shnei motos. No, so the diuk is b'shnei motos, and the diuk is from the fact that it says vayis'u hu, which is mashma that there were multiple pair carrying these poles. So it says there were two poles. And then Amar Rav Yitzchak, Tertani ver Tertani der Tertani, that it was set up that it was a load and a load under a load. So in other words, there weren't only two poles, there were actually two sets of four poles. So okay, tzad shmona nasu eshkol echad, that there were basically eight people were needed to carry the single eshkol of grapes. The article over here has a diagram. This basically, the way Rashi explains is that the two poles were set up like this, parallel to each other, and then they had two other poles set up as an X under those two poles to support. And they carried multiple clusters of grapes on those poles. So if you have the two poles set up parallel, and then the two poles like an X under those two poles, and one person at the end of each pole, it turns out that there were eight people carrying the poles, because there were four poles total, right? Each pole requires one person at either end. Four times two is eight. So there were eight meraglim that were carrying. There were eight meraglim that were carrying these poles. So says the Gemara. So in addition to the eight meraglim who were needed to carry the cluster of grapes and to hold on to the poles, one of them carried a pomegranate, and one of them carried a date. And Yehoshua v'Kalev lo nasu klom. Yehoshua and Kalev didn't carry anything. There were 12 meraglim, obviously. So far, we've accounted for 10. We haven't accounted for Yehoshua and Kalev, so they didn't carry anything. Why not? Either because they were too chashav to carry these things of a heavy burden, because they simply weren't complicit in this Eitzah of the Meraglim. Why were the Meraglim carrying back these fruits? It wasn't to show the bounty of Eretz Yisrael, to show what miracles HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs in Eretz Yisrael. It was to show that everything in Eretz Yisrael is so massive, there's no way we're going to be able to survive here. There's no way we're going to be able to conquer this land. So because they weren't complicit in the Atzat Meraglim, that's why they didn't carry back the fruit, according to one of the views over here. So says the Gemara, Pligi bar Ravami of Rav Yitzchak Nafcha. So Ravami and Rav Yitzchak Nafcha have a machlokas. Chad Amru, the Divrei Rav Yehuda, according to the Shita of Rav Yehuda, who said that the Yardane rose to a height of only 12 mil, and not like Rav Elazar Rav Shimon, who said that it rose to a height of over 300 mil, so Kachaniyasan Avru. So the Gemara thinks initially to explain the machlokas like this. Rav Yehuda, who says that the Yardane rose to a height of 12 mil, holds that Klal Yisrael crossed the Yardane in the formation in which they traveled. And because they traveled in a formation that was 12 mil by 12 mil, 12 mil had to cross the Yardane. The water flowed at the same speed as the people crossed the Yardane. So if 12 mil had to cross, the water backed up to a height of 12 mil. And Ledivri Rav Elazar Rav Shimon, Bezer Chazal Avro. And according to Rav Elazar Rav Shimon, who said that the Yardane rose to a height of 300 mil, or more than 300 mil, he held that no, Klal Yisrael didn't cross in the formation in which they encamped, so they crossed one after the other. So if they're crossing one after the other, that would take a lot longer. That would be a lot longer of a chain than 12 mil, which is why the water backed all the way up to a height of 300 mil. V'chad Amar, and the other Mandi Amar says, no, they're not arguing about the formation that Klal Yisrael took when they crossed the Yardane. Chad Amar, Bein Lamar, Kachani Yasin Avru. No, everybody holds that they crossed the Yardane in the formation of their encampment. However, Mar Savar Adam Kal, one says that a person walks faster. Umar Savar Mayim Kalim, and the other Mandi Amar says that the water flows faster than the people were able to walk when they crossed the Yardane. And therefore, just because the water flows faster, that's why the water had to back up to a height of 300 mil here. So if you look at Tosfos over here, Dibir Maschel Mar, which is in the first medium sized line over here, it says Neradachi Perusha Afal Pisha Davar Yadua Shemayim Kalim. Sadafka Kishem Yardim Kidei Derech Murutzasan Aval Kam Shayin Nigdashin Violin Shir Kalos Mayim Vishir Kalos Adam Shava. So Tosfos says, can it really be that these Amaram are having a machlokas as to what's faster, the speed at which people walk and the speed at which water flows? If you stand at a riverbank and you look at how the river flows down, it's obvious that the water flows much more quickly than the speed at which a person can walk. And Tosfos says, yes, under ordinary natural circumstances, that's correct. However, over here they were arguing about what's faster, the speed at which a person walks or the speed at which the water flows when it's flowing vertically. Everybody agrees when it's flowing horizontally downstream, it flows faster. The question is, when it was flowing vertically, does that still flow faster than people walk, or did that flow equally to the speed in which people walked? So says the Gemara now, four lines down on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, the Gemara now is going to go on a tangent about the Meraglim. Having mentioned the Meraglim and the weight of the various fruits that they carry, the Gemara is now going to discuss in detail. So Shlach Lecha Anashim. So says the Gemara, it says in Pasuk, Shlach Lecha Anashim. So Amarei Shlakesh, Shlach Lecha Midaitcha. So in other words, send, if you want to send Meraglim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells to Moshe, but it's on your cheshbon. So V'chi Adam Zeh, and this is a kinui for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Would HaKadosh Baruch Hu borer chelek rali atzmo? Would HaKadosh Baruch Hu authorize something that is bound to turn out bad? Doesn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu give bechira chafshis? Would HaKadosh Baruch Hu really place somebody in a situation where there's really no alternative to him sinning? So Amar Eish Lokesh Be'enai V'lo Be'enai Shalmakam. In other words, that the Moshe says that that I thought it was a good idea that the Meraglim be sent. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't think it was a good idea. How does this answer the question? How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu put people in a scenario where they're doomed to failure? So the answer is HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't put them in the scenario. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded the Meraglim to go, then you could ask how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu command the Meraglim to go if their mission was doomed to failure, if he knew for sure that they were going to sin. But the answer is HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not command the Meraglim to go. HaKadosh Baruch Hu merely permitted the Meraglim to go. And so he permitted them to put themselves in a situation where they ultimately sinned. But it's not like HaKadosh Baruch Hu stripped from them their Bechira Chafshis and put them in a situation where they were doomed, to chait. Says the Gemara Vayter, "Bayachperu lanu asaaretz," and they should search out for us spy out for us the land. So says the Gemara, "Amar Rav Chiya Baraba, Meraglim lo niskavnu ela lubushasha shel Eretz Yisrael." The Meraglim intended from the get go to humiliate, to speak ill about Eretz Yisrael. Ksivach, it says over here, "Bayachperu lanu asaaretz," that they will spy out the land for us. Ksiv hasam, and it says elsewhere, V'chafra ha'lavana, the Levana will be abashed, the Levana will be embarrassed, u'bosha ha'chama, and the sun will be embarrassed. So from the Lashon of Chafra, or Vayachperu, it's mashma that they had intended to embarrass, they had intended to humiliate Eretz Yisrael, and they left with evil intentions. Ve'lishmosam, and these are the names of the Meraglim, Lerata Ruvain, Shemua ben Zachar. So, and then so on and so forth. Summer of Yitzchak, Dover Zemesuras Biadenu, this, we have a Mesorah, we have a Seinu, that Meraglim al Shem Maaseyem Nikru, that the names of the Meraglim were given al Shem Maaseyem as an allusion to their Maisim, to what they ultimately did. Va'anulo also Biadenu Ela Echad. And we only know how to interpret the names of one of the Meraglim, but which shows that they were bad people inherently. Sesur ben Michal, the name Sesur ben Michal, what does that mean? Sesur shesasar masav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he denied the work of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Michal sha'asa atzmo mach, that he made himself very weak. The Maral explains that a person's name reveals the essence of a person, and the Gemara demonstrates that the wickedness of the Meraglim was foreshadowed in their names. And the Maral says that's why, in fact, the Meraglim received such a major punishment. It's not that they merely, experienced a lapse in judgment, or maybe they spoke in a slightly different manner than the way that they should have. Says the Maral, no, these people were evil to their core. And because they were evil to their core, that's why they deserve such a tremendous punishment of the entire generation dying out before they were able to enter Klal Yisrael, because these people were just base wicked. They were wicked people down to their core. Zemar Rav Yochanan, so says Rav Yochanan, Af Anu Nemar, we know how to interpret another name of one of the Meraglim, Nachbi ben Vafsi, Nachbi shehichbi dvarav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he concealed the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Vafsi shepisa al midosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he stepped over the midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And how did he step over? How did he ignore the midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He ignored the midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he ignored the midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu because they ignored the ability of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to deliver Eretz Yisrael to the Bnei Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said he was going to do it, but the Meraglim didn't believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Meraglim thought they knew better, and they were nervous that they shouldn't be killed by the people who were then inhabiting Eretz Yisrael. So it says in the Gemara Vayter, Vayalu Banegev, that they went up in the Negev, Vayavo ad Chevron, and they came until Chevron, Vayavo mi boile, it should say that they came. Why does it say Vayavo ad Chevron, that he came until Chevron? So Amar Rava, Melamed Shapirish Kolev Matzas Meraglim, that Kolev peeled away from the Atzas Meraglim, V'halach v'neshateach al Kivrei Avos, and he went to Davin al Kivrei Avos. So Amarlan, so he said at the Kivrei Avos, Avosai Bikshu Alai Rachmim, my father's requests Rachmim for me, She'enotzol Matzas Meraglim, that I should be saved from the Eitz of the Meraglim. So similar to the discussion that we had yesterday about the concept of not davening in Aramaic, because the Malachim don't understand Aramaic. So over here, the Mefarshim work hard to explain exactly what Kolev was doing, because we know that there's an inyan to daven at Kivrei Avos, but when you daven at Kivrei Avos, you're supposed to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Kivrei Avos. You're not supposed to daven to the Tzadikim at Kivrei Avos. You're not supposed to daven to the mace. In fact, there's a machlokes in the Gemara elsewhere whether Mesim actually know what's going on in this world. And if you want to say Mesim don't know what's going on in this world, then they're powerless to, they don't even know what you're davening about. So why are you davening to them? But certainly it would appear inappropriate that you are, asking the mace that you're davening to the mace. So the Mefarshim worked to try to explain what exactly Kolev was doing. Some explain that he wasn't davening to the mace, he was davening that the mace should intercede. He was davening that the Avos should intercede and also daven on his behalf, which still sounds a little bit like davening to the mace, right? You're davening that the mace should intercede on your behalf. Others explain that he was just informing the mesim of his plight and hoping that the mesim would intercede on his behalf. That also assumes that the mesim know what's going on. Usually you go because at Kivrei Avos you're moved to a heightened level of spirituality, and you're moved to offer a more sincere and a more heartfelt tefillah. So Kolev went and Kolev davened that he should be saved from the Eitza of the Meraglim. Now, where was Yeshua on this? We know that there were two Meraglim who rejected the evil plan of the Meraglim and refused to go along with his sin. There's Kalev and there's Yeshua. So only Kalev went to daven by Kivrei Avos. Yeshua didn't have to go daven. So says the Gemara that Yeshua kfar bikesh Moshe lav rachmim. Yeshua was all good. He didn't have to go daven because Moshe was already mavakesh rachmim to Yeshua. Shenemar, it says in Pasuk, v'yikra Moshe el Hoshea ben Nun Yeshua, that Moshe Rabbeinu changed Hoshea ben Nun's name to Yeshua. And Yeshua alludes to Ka Yoshiacha me Atzas Meraglim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should save you from the Eitz of the Meraglim. Behind the Dichsev, and that's why it says in the Pasuk, Va'avdi Kalev Ekev Hoysa Ruach Acheres Imo. That Kalev had a Ruach Acheres. Kalev had a Ruach Acheres with him. So what does this mean? So Kalev inherited Chevron, the place where he had to go visit to pray during the Eitzah and the Meraglim in order to pray that it should be saved from the Eitzah. So Kalev had a Ruach Acheres because Kalev was tempted by the Eitzah Hara to sin, to go along with the Eitzah of the Meraglim. However, Kalev davened at Kivrei Avos that he should be saved from this Yetzer Hara. That's why he had a Ruach Acheres. Not the same Ruach, not the same Yetzer Hara that the other Meraglim had. The other Meraglim were tempted by the Yetzer Hara and they succumbed. Kalev was tempted by the Yetzer Hara and he prevailed because he davened at Kivrei Avos. Yeshua didn't have the Ruach Acheres. Yeshua didn't even experience the Yetzer Hara to sin with the Yetzer of the Meraglim, because Yeshua was guaranteed a salvation already from Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe prayed for Yeshua in advance before the mission was ever sent. So says the Gemara Vayter Vasham, and there in Eretz Yisrael was Achiman, Sheshai, and Talmai. They were Yelidei HaAnak. So Achiman means Miyuman Shebaachim, the most important of his brothers. And the Miyuman is from the Lashon of Yamin. The right hand is known as the dominant hand. It's more chashav than the left hand. And Achiman was more important, Mistama, because he was stronger than the rest of his brothers, says Rashi. Sheshai Shemesim Esaretz Kishchasos, that he would make the earth like pits when he would walk. Rashi says Sheshai is from the Lashon of Shayish, that marble is very heavy, and Sheshai was so huge, he was so large, that his feet were so heavy that he would turn the land into pits whenever he would walk. And Talmai Ishamesim Esaret Slumim, that he would turn the earth into furrows whenever he would walk. Davar Acher, Achiman bana Anas, he built a city called Anas. Sheishai bana Alash, Talmai bana Talbush. Yilidei ha'anak, what does it mean? Yilidei ha'anak, the children of giants. We already know they were giants, so probably their parents weren't people of average height. Shemanikan chama bimkamasan, that they made the sun look like a necklace out of their height. In other words, they were so tall that when you looked up in the sky, it looked as if the sun were hanging over here on their chest, like they were wearing the sun around their neck like a necklace. That's how tall they were. So the Chevron Sheva Shanim Nivnasa. So Chevron was built 7 years before Tzoan Mitzrayim. So my Nivnasa, what does it mean that it was built? So Ilema Nivnasa Mamish, if it means that it was really built 7 years before Mitzrayim. So Efshar Adam Bona Bayis Libno Katan Kodom Libno Gadol, is it possible that a person would build a house for his young son before his old son? Because it says in the Pasuk, Bnei Cham Kush Umitzrayim. It says in the Pasuk, Bnei Cham Kush Umitzrayim. So you have to look inside in the Torah or to see what the Kasha is. It says, Ubnei Cham Kush Mitzrayim Ufut Uchenan, that the children of Cham were Kush. Mitzrayim is the second son, Put, and then Canaan is the fourth son. Chevron is in Canaan, it's in Eretz Yisrael. Tzoan is in Mitzrayim, which is obviously the name of the second son. So is it possible that Chevron was built 7 years before Tzoan and Mitzrayim, before Mitzrayim? Is it possible that Chum built a city for his youngest son before he built a city for his second son? That's not the way things work. Usually the oldest kids get things first before the younger kids get them. So says the Gemara, no, you're right. Elishaisa Muvuna Al Achas Mishiva Bitsoan, that it was seven times as fertile as Soan and Mitzrayim. Vein lechat Rashim b'chol Eretz Yisrael Yosem Mechevron. We don't have any stony ground in Eretz Yisrael that is basically more stony and jagged and ragged than Chevron. De kivrei bashchivi, that's where they bury people. The reason that they bury people in Chevron is because the land is otherwise not suitable for anything. It's not like you're taking fields that are very arid land and putting mesim there. You're burying them because the land is not fit for anything else. Vein lechamula b'chol Eretz Yosem Eretz Mitzrayim, and you don't find any land that is better, that is more fertile than Eretz Mitzrayim among all the lands of the world. Shenemar kigan Hashem k'Eretz Mitzrayim. Eretz Mitzrayim is compared to Kaviyachol to Gan Hashem. Ve'en lecha me'ula b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim yoser mitzoan. And there's no place in Eretz Mitzrayim that is more fertile than Soan. Dichsiv kihayu b'tsoan sarav. That's where the royalty in Egypt lived, because that's where the land was most arid. That's where the land was most conducive to planting and to farming. Vafilu achi chevron mevuna echas mishiva b'tsoan. And even nevertheless, Chevron was still the inherent power of Eretz Yisrael, was that Chevron was still seven times better than Soan Mitzrayim, even though Mitzrayim was the best of all the world and Soan was the best of all Mitzrayim, still Chevron was seven times better. So says the Gemara, the Chevron Trashamaya, is the land in Chevron really so rocky? Is it really so incapable of planting? Vakseva yihi miketz arbam shana vayomer avshalom elamelech Elchana, I beg you to go. Vama Rav Avia Visema Rava Barachana Shahalach Lahavi Kvasame Chevron. He went to bring sheep from Chevron. Vitanya, and we learn Elim Mimoav, Ayala Mimoav, that you bring the rams from Moav, Kvasame Chevron, and the sheep from Chevron. So is it possible that the land of Chevron is so rocky? If the land of Chevron was so rocky, then there wouldn't be so many sheep there, because the sheep wouldn't have any place to graze. So says the Gemara, no, we learn that it's rocky from that. Aidi de Kalisha Ara, because the quality of the land is so poor, of the Raya of Ashaman Kenyana, that they can't farm there, they can't plant there, so nothing is planted there except for brush. And the brush is what the flocks would graze on, and there was so much of this brush, because the land was otherwise so rocky, they couldn't plant anything else on the land, that the sheep would graze on that brush all day, and they would grow very fat. That's dafka why the best sheep came from Chevron, because there was nothing else to plant there. So tomorrow, we will continue, we're going to continue, God willing, with the story of the Meraglim, and then we'll get back into, the story of the Bnei Yisrael crossing the Yarden.